Tell Me a Story is a program from the Midwest Genealogy Center dedicated to preserving the stories of people, places, and communities. This recording was made possible in partnership with the Friends of Inglewood Theater to document memories of Independence, Missouri's historic Inglewood Theater and Ben Franklin Store. We hope you enjoy the following story and consider using the Tell Me a Story program to preserve your voice and story for future generations.
Okay, my name is Emily Wildhopper. I'm interviewing Bill McLeod at the Inglewood Arts Center in Independence, Missouri, as part of the Midwest Genealogy Center's Community Archiving Day. And today's date is May 17th, 2025. Bill, what is your connection to the Inglewood Theater?
Well, I grew up in the area. Okay. And, I went to school, Kansas City School District, went through Van Horn, graduated in the class of 85. But when I was younger, I used to ride my bike up here and see shows and go to Ben Franklin. And that was my shopping center.
Sure. What's the first show you remember seeing here?
I can't tell you that, but I can remember the last show was Escape to Witch Mountain. But they used to have, like, Saturdays, you come up and you watch cartoons. They'd have cartoons run for half a day, the good older ones. And then they would do all kinds of different shows. Sometimes it was Westerns. And sometimes it was Laurel and Hardy or Abbott and Costello, Three Stooges, and it was fairly cheap. Yeah. And, you could get concessions there or you could go before over to Ben Franklin and stuff your pockets you bought stuff, but you filled your pockets and you just went in there and it was just a hangout for a lot of the kids to do on a Saturday. We wouldn't do it every Saturday, but we did it quite a few times.
So you went with friends or?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There was a group of us and we'd all ride our bikes and lock them up behind Ben Franklin and go through Ben Franklin and walk to the front of the theater and go in there and, it'd take up 2 or 3 hours of that day. And it was fun.
Can you describe what you remember the theater looking like?
Oh yeah, it was really, really like ornate. I mean, it was different than like the newer theaters at the mall or something. The mall would be Blue Ridge Mall, and the theaters that they had there were just basically walk-in and everything, but this was an experience because you'd walk in and there's the concession stands and all the ads for the new movies, and the ticket booth was outside, and you got your ticket and there was a guy and he'd tear them and you go get your soft drinks or whatever they had, and then you go pick your seat. And they had a crying room in it, which a lot of people don't even know what a crying room is. That's like if you took a baby to the show and it started crying, you could go back in that room and still everybody out in the theater could enjoy the show, and the mother and the child could enjoy the show, but the child could go ahead and make noise or cry or whatever, talk, scream, and nobody else could hear him. It was kind of neat. And everything was very Art Deco, like the men's restroom. It reminded me of a music hall downtown, and everything was tile, and it was a pretty nice place. Big chandeliers and the lights were always, like a different there were different colors on the walls. And once the show started, the big curtain would open up and then you could see the screen. And I didn't know it until later that was because that was also a stage besides just a theater.
Did you ever see any like shows on the stage or?
I seen one, that was after the, that country and Western people took it over. I can't remember the name of that, but, I remember more of the theater myself. That would have been in the, mid-70s.
So it was a theater first, and then it became the...
Well, according to my dad, which my dad lived in this area all his life, too, according to my dad, the theater was built. There was old houses there, and they took them out or tore them down or moved them, and they started building that theater before World War II. And he was just little bitty, but my grandfather lived in this area too. He grew up over by Mount Washington Cemetery. And he remembers that they built part of the theater before the war. And then after the war, World War II, they finished the theater. And then my dad came along just shortly after World War II.
So did your father and grandfather also go to the Inglewood Theater?
Oh yeah, I'm sure they did. And my grandmother and my mom. As a matter of fact, my dad worked for Lipton Tea, and he was a maintenance supervisor at that time. And Lipton was going to save money this one year, and they cut out all the overtime. Well, my mom was pretty much a stay-at-home mom, and so she started driving a school bus then. Mm-hmm. And my dad and her, after work, and another couple, they would take turns cleaning out the theater at night. And now I was just a little kid. I was only probably about 6 or 7. And I'd go up and help too. But, you know, as soon as the theater would close, you know, you had to sweep all the aisles out and then get all the popcorn and stuff. And you can find everything after a show, from money to uneaten popcorn, everything, coats, gloves, hats, you know, everybody, and would just leave stuff. And you swept it all out and you put it all in the trash, and then you mop the floors underneath the chairs and everything. And the concession stand, I remember one of the big deals was you could drink, when you did that job, you could go drink all the Coke and stuff afterwards. You just bring your own cup and fill it up with ice and everything. Well, I got to where I was cleaning out from underneath the Coke place, because there was a counter and it seemed like everybody dropped their money down in between the back of the Coke machine and the you know, the counter. And here I was 7 or 8 years old, and there's quarters and nickels and dimes and things down there. And, you know, that was my pay. I get the broom and sweep it all out. And you know, if I made a dollar or two, I was like, wow, look at all this money. And we did that for 1 year. And then they decided that it was unprofitable for them not to offer the people overtime. And so... But yeah, that was a good time. And there were some big shows that came out in that time. And oh, my dad, he would be like, oh, we ain't doing this no more. We're going to quit. No, because it was after a big show, like I know Escape to Witch Mountain was one of the biggest shows, but we didn't have to clean that one up, thank goodness, because it was crazy. It was full house, you know, and it's just, that's one of the biggest memories I have in that place.
So you cleaned for a year, and then after your dad had overtime again.
Yeah, we didn't do it anymore.
Okay. You also mentioned the Ben Franklin store. Can you tell me a little bit about how it looked, or do you remember any of the people that ran it, or?
Well, I remember they were the same people that always was in there. You know, they got to recognize kids and stuff. And, you know, I put together models and stuff, and I remember the biggest thing was when you come up there, and if you wanted to buy a model, that was all right, but they didn't want you to buy the model glue. You had to have a parent come with you for the model glue, because I guess people were sniffing. That was a big thing back in the 70s. And so they wanted older people to come buy the model glue. But, you know, I had a kind of a, they knew who I was, or I maybe didn't know who they were, but they, oh yeah, you're going to put together that model. And it wasn't like I was buying model glue, you know, one tube of glue would last four or five models. Not every time I bought a model, I buy four or five tubes of glue. And you know, they had such a neat layout, because you could park your bike in back and chain it up. There was a ramp that went to the back door, and places to chain your bike up. And you walked in, and first thing you stepped in there, you smelt the popcorn, because they had a popcorn machine. They'd make popcorn. And they had roasted cashew nuts that they were roasting there. And it was like a big candy store, because you could buy the candy by bulk, you know, like a scoop of chocolate-covered raisins or a scoop of Jolly Ranchers or, you know, whatever. And it was all there in glass, and you're like, oh yeah. And had, you know, all the wax bottles of juice and the fake teeth and the cigarettes that were chalk, and, you know, it was all the stuff. And every year about the same time, they'd have Mexican jumping beans on the counter for sale. And I didn't realize that those Mexican jumping beans, they're not really beans or anything. Them are bugs inside there. And they're moving around in that. But you could buy that for like 25 cents, a little plastic box. And you set it on your dresser. And the warmer it got, the more they'd make noise. They'd sit there and click, click, click. You hear them click, click, click in there. And that was fun. They always had something, some kind of little toy or something that was, everybody had to have one. And had a real good, if you was doing hobbies, they had all the hobby supplies you needed. I remember going up there with my grandma, and she was a big quilt sewer, and she'd buy fabric and yarn and all that.
So it wasn't just like food, it was all kinds.
Oh yeah. And then they had any kind of card. It was like you could go buy anniversary cards in there. I mean, a big selection. And they had, you know, when it was hot out, they had fans and everything that you could buy. It was basically the predecessor of Walmart, I think, but a smaller scale. But I mean, they had about everything. you could go buy your lunch box that you wanted to carry all year up there. Toys, they had toys, Hot Wheels, you know, cars, Barbie dolls, models, those Bossel airplanes, Bosselwood airplanes, the gliders, they had those, and then they had the bi-wing ones that had like two wings on it, and then they had the rubber band one with the plastic propeller that you could buy, and that was with the models, but they, you know, they had a, every kid wanted one of them. I mean, it was cheap and give you a good week or better worth of enjoyment if you didn't get stuck on the roof or in a tree or kite season come along. Oh, they had selection of kites and, you know, Christmas come along. They had wrapping paper and all that, Christmas trees, lights, the plastic Santa Clauses and candles, the Noel candles, the big ones that went out your front porch, and it's a pretty neat place. A lot of fond memories there.
Sounds like, yeah. What impact do you feel like the theater and the store had on the community? Like, it sounds like kind of everybody went.
Oh yeah, everybody went. You know, it was close to the house. You know, I could ride my bike to it. It was safe, you know. It was just people, but back then people respected other people's property and you know, they were proud of where they lived and that kind of thing, and something's happened since then to now, you know, as far as that goes. People don't respect other people. They don't, they're not courteous. They're not, most generally, some people. And, you know, the further away from Missouri you get, I guess, the worse it gets. I've always just stayed kind of right here. I go to Colorado and here. And been to Shiloh, Tennessee, and Florida, Las Vegas. Las Vegas is just a man-made place out in the desert. Chicago. Ain't been very far.
So you mentioned you remember the last movie you saw at Englewood. Do you remember when Englewood closed?
Well, it kind of went from the theater to the opera with live country bands and different acts and everything. And then I remember after that, it closed for, you know, there was nothing there for a long time. And the neighbor across the street, he said that when the Grand Ole Opry came, the guy who purchased that purchased the show, the theater, on the courthouse steps for back taxes. And he kept it for a long time. And then I don't know when, like, Wade Williams came into the realm and kind of collected it. And he opened it up for a brief time, but he wasn't a very community type person. He was more of a, what do I want to say? just more of a self kind of world's about me.
Do you remember, did you have strong feelings about Inglewood going out of business or?
Oh, the Ben Franklin store, yes. Yeah. Oh, that was a sad day for the whole community. It was just, you know, I blame that on places like Walmart, big box stores. That's just like when the hardware store closed across the street. That guy had everything in that little store and easier to find than you go to a big box store and they have more stuff, but the things you needed to keep your house and, you know, lawnmowers and things going, he was more than ample to handle and carry all that. Yeah, it cost a little bit more, but also he'd have a tab for you if you, you know, I mowed a lot of people's yard when I was younger, and sometimes my lawnmower would break or something, and I'd have to fix it, and I got to where I knew him pretty well, and he set up a tab for me so I could just come in and pay it, and if I'm out and working in the yards or something, I needed something, I could just stop in there and pick it up and get on the business and then, you know, come back later when I had money in my pocket and pain.
Okay. What would you like to see happen in this space that they're planning on fixing up the Inglewood? And do you have anything you'd like to see happen?
Well, I've been in the community for a long time. I've been involved with the community for a long time. Matter of fact, this art building that we're in now was just me and about four other people that just start talking about what can we do to improve our area. And this building was vacant and the roof was, you know, all the metal was dripped out of it. The roof was leaking. It wasn't going to be around much longer if it was going in the direction it was going. Same way with the show. If somebody don't start doing something with the show, it's showing signs in places that are the first signs of not being good. You can look at the top of the buildings, and when the brick starts coming apart, that's because it's not been conditioned on the inside and the moisture is seeping in and it's just popping. And that gets expensive to repair. And pretty soon, you know, a bulldozer come in, we'll have Section 8 housing or a high rise gang store or something. It wouldn't be good for the community. This here was what we came up with as far as bringing life back into the community without any money. I mean, you know, we basically started out with nothing. And the city people don't have vision, can't just put their minds around a vision and click on it. But when you got a lot of dreamers and thinkers and workers, you can get something done. And this building's proof of that, because there was a lot of people that were thinkers and doers, and they got accomplished something. They may not be the ones out on the front row saying, "Oh, we," but they're the ones that's in the crowd and they're thinking, "Yeah, we could have done that a little different, but for an old building, and she's in pretty good shape for what she is. And people are utilizing it. People are coming together. People are enjoying themselves. They're learning things. They're playing with glass. They're playing with clays. They're working metal. You know, they're playing with wood projects, painting murals, pushing their minds to other boundaries than what they're used and comfortable with, opening up new careers for themselves. And yeah, it's really, some of the people up here are very talented. They came in and is like that movie, if you build it, they will come. Well, the community built it and they're coming. And we had some real good interns, glass blowing. I never thought that that would be possible here. And I helped figure out the system. And it's from all the glass blowers that come in, they really like our layout because the way we designed it, most of the heat stays out of the building. So in the summertime, when they're blowing glass, it's warm in there because they got to keep it 2,000 degrees. But it's not, oh my gosh, unbearable hot. And they're not just drenched with sweat like they would be in a regular old glass foundry. And people can watch and be safe and enjoy it. And my aunt and uncle come from Chicago, and she took a little class and made a dish, and she was so proud of that. I was so happy that I got her to come up and do it, and she just talks about it all the time. That's her ice cream bowl. My uncle wouldn't do it, and now my uncle, hey, where's my ice cream bowl? No, that ain't yours. You're going to have to make one next time you're in town. So, but it was really neat. She really enjoyed it.
Bill, is there anything else you'd like to share or talk about with the theater or with the Ben Franklin store? Anything we missed?
Just that it takes a lot of money. And it's going to take a lot of people, and it's going to take skills, and just don't cut corners. I mean, you know, these buildings deserve as much respect as they did when they were brand new, even though they are quite a bit older. They don't make them like this anymore. It's a lot easier to just go out on an empty lot and put up a Walmart, you know, steel structure, blah, square barn, than to actually brick and mortar, Art Deco. You know, the Art Deco, that's one thing about the whole community that I love, is every house on the block is different. We got a wide variety of architecture from, we got Tudor style, we got Cape Cod houses, we got four squares, we got Victorians, we got English, early English, modern, and there's even a what is that called? He's way before his time as far as architecture. We got one of them houses here, and I just can't think of the name of it. But yeah, it it's a very unique area, and it needs respect and it needs love, and people that come and live here need to respect it and love it too, and come visit. You know, it's just not a lot of places like it left.